You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, coming to you from Florida on the East Coast. Hurricane, not a big deal, but person you're about to hear from on the West Coast, he dodged a bullet, and he's been helping you dodge bullets in the stock market for years now. I'm talking about our good friend, Michael Pinto. Michael, it's great to have you back. I'm glad you survived the storm okay. But the economic storm that's taking place is a Category 5, and nobody seems to be aware of it. You had been warning us for literally months, Michael, and here we are. We're in, maybe the eye is just about to pass over us, and then we get the back end of the storm, and that's where all the damage gets done, right?
Well, good to be on with you, Carrie, talking to you from the wet coast as opposed to your safety on the dry East Coast. Thank God we dodged the most of the tumult, but we have to pray for all these people in trouble over here. So have everything wiped out, like Sanibel and Captiva. They don't really even exist anymore. But going back to the economics, but Jamie Dimon did say there was a hurricane. I mean, in the beginning of this year, January, he was saying this is going to be the best year. This is going to be the best economic growth year he has ever seen in his lifetime, and perhaps ever in recorded history. That's what he said. I mean, I'm not using hyperbole. Then a few months later, he said the hurricane, not Ian, a hurricane, an economic hurricane, was off the coast. Well, it's slamming into us right now. I don't even think we've seen the eye wall yet. I think, and if we did see the eye wall, unfortunately, the hurricane is still intensifying. Now, I said this in July of 2021. I said, we're going to have a great year in 2021. We're having a great year. Mm-hmm. I said, but beware of 2022, because at that time, you're going to see inflation wax so perniciously, so acutely, that the Fed's going to have to slam on the brakes to this economy. So you're going to see record high inflation. I said this in July of 2021. You're going to see record high inflation. You're going to have a Fed slamming on the brakes, but they're going to do so in an economy that's extremely weak. Well, that's exactly what is happening. I think the economic hurricane is just, maybe it was a tropical storm in Q1 and Q2 when we actually had negative GDP growth. I think it's intensifying into a Cat 4 or a Cat 5. By late this year into early 2023. So we're just getting started, unfortunately, with the economic analysis.
Yeah. Well, it's just getting started. And how come so many of you out there don't even know that it's going on, Michael? Why is that?
Well, you know why? If you're a money manager on Wall Street and you work for one of these major wirehouses, you cannot short the market. You have to be nearly 100% invested. Otherwise, you get a call from your compliance department and say, hey, listen, why are you in 10% cash? We can't bill on 10% cash. You can't do the right thing for your clients. You have to always be bullish. So, they're coming out and saying, hey, I even heard somebody today say, hey, this is great news that the non-farm payroll report had 263,000 jobs created. That's wonderful news, because the Fed's going to hike rates. And you want the Fed to hike rates so they have a lot of leeway to cut rates once a recession hits. That's what they're saying. Here's the truth. Here's why the economic hurricane is intensifying and get a lot worse. Because I don't use hyperbole. I don't get paid to be wrong. I get paid to be correct more than I'm wrong. I do get things wrong. Don't get me wrong. But I'm more correct than I am incorrect. So the last time the Federal Reserve, I think only two times in history, the Federal Reserve ever raised interest rates by 400 to 500 basis points in a year. It was in 74 and in 79-80 period. The P/E ratio on the Dow, by the way, when the Fed raised interest rates during that time, it was from 10% to 15%. on a rate of change basis, we're going from 0.33% on a 10-year note to somewhere north of 4%. We're going from 0% on a Fed funds rate to 4.5%. This is not my opinion. This is not what I'm gleaning from the stars. This is what is coming out of the no credibility Fed that's saying right now that they are going to go to 4% plus on the Fed funds rate by the end of this year and to 4.5% to 5% by the first half of 2023. And for an organization that got inflation completely wrong, I mean, remember for years and years, they couldn't get to 2%. Then they finally got to 2. It wasn't really 2. It got to 20. Moved the decimal point over one. That's the inflation rate that they engendered. They completely said it was going to be transitory. They missed that. Now, the only thing they can do right now, if they want to salvage any credibility they have left, not with me, they lost that a long time ago. But if they want to salvage any credibility left that they have on Wall Street, is they have to go and do what they say they're going to do. So you have a Fed funds rate that's going to 0 to 4.5. That's only happened one time before in history. And that was in 1979-80 period under Volcker. You know what the P.E. ratio on the Dow was back then? I'm sorry, on the S&P 500 was back then?
That was low.
7!
Mm-hmm.
Very 7.5 or 7.7. We're at 18 times trailing 12-month earnings now. So if you're going to tell me that oh, by the way, I had this interject this with haste. The last time the Fed was hiking rates by 500 basis points in the span of a year, the rate of change was from 10 to 15, not from 0 to 5, but the big rate of change difference. And they weren't doing anything known as quantitative tightening back then. They are now burning $95 billion a month off out of the money supply. So this is an extremely dangerous moment to be, you know, waiting for the market to bounce off some, you know, moving average that Wall Street likes to throw at you. The fact of the matter is that we're going into a very intense recession. The earnings is going to plummet. The PE ratio, the ratio you put on that, the price on that earnings is going to come down. So you're going to have a contraction in that ratio, both top and bottom line. And I think that you're going to have something break in the credit markets. So you're not going to be able to float a junk bond. Commercial paper dries up, leveraged loans dry up, something like that in the credit markets is going to have to break to have the Fed come to the rescue. Because even after we have a recession, even after the unemployment rate rises to 4 or 5%, wherever they want it, even after we have, you know, negative ISMs, even after we have plunging GDP, even after we have earnings plunge, the Fed will not be able to go immediately back to 0% interest rates and to QE. Unless and until the credit markets falter. And you wouldn't want to be anywhere near the stock market when that happens.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you were calling for this. You were calling for the higher rates. You said the Fed was going to do exactly what they're doing now. So we have to give you credit for that. We also talked about a pivot, and that's kind of what you're talking about now. So how much longer before they have to pivot?
Gary, can we define pivot first? Are we defining pivot the traditional way, meaning that, oh, the Fed is going to slash interest rates, return to zero interest rate policies, and engage in some form of QE? If you're waiting for that, like I said, like I just finished saying, you're going to have a complete freezing of the credit markets. Then you might get the Fed reluctantly in arrears, dragging them their feet the whole way back down to zero, because they know where this ends up. We know how to engender inflation. And that's why I said it in July of 21. I said, you're going to have record high inflation. You do that by having an unholy marriage between Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell, the Treasury Secretary and the head of the Federal Reserve. You just monetize a bunch of government debt and you don't just keep it on Wall Street. You send it directly to people. You circumnavigate the banking system. You send checks. The government sends checks to people, and the Federal Reserve buys all those bonds that the Treasury floats. That's exactly how we got here. And the Fed doesn't want to be here again, so they're going to be very loath to go back to doing the same thing. I think they may do it, but they'll do it not when the market is trading at 18 times trailing 12-month earnings. They might do it when it's 7 times earnings. I mean, that's a reduction of half at least from where we are, assuming the earnings stays the same. Okay. There's going to be a multiple contraction and an earnings contraction.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're heading towards a real deflationary environment. So what happens to all that debt that can't be serviced?
You remember back after the collapse of the real estate market, the Fed greatly enlarged its balance sheet from $700 billion all the way to $4.6 trillion eventually, before they paused and did their temporary QT. We had inflation, but where was the inflation, Kerry? The inflation was on Wall Street. Mm. It was real estate prices, and it was in the equity market, and it was in the bond market. This time around, because we engaged in helicopter money, the inflation was on Wall Street, but also on Main Street. That is why I firmly believe the next time we do this, they're going to just, they'll be very reluctant to go back into issuing checks directly to people. Well, you talk about, now let me answer your question. You say, and I hear a lot of people on the mainstream financial media say, you know, the economy has deleveraged. It's not the same situation that we have in 2008. If you look at household debt as a relationship to where it was prior to the Great Recession, circa 2008, we have added $3 trillion to household balance sheets. Now, I do admit, as a percentage of the phony GDP, that ratio has come down a little bit. But historically speaking, household debt to GDP is very much higher than it's been in the past. And if you look at corporate debt, we're at 50% debt to GDP, nominal record high, 50% in that ratio, record high. It was 45% in 2000. It was 45% in the year 2008. And if you look at government debt, it's through the roof on every metric. You know, we're at $32 trillion, $33 trillion, national debt. And even as a percentage of GDP. And people say, well, it's government debt. Who cares? Now, government, you know, if the Fed is no longer buying that debt has to be issued to the public. The public has to buy that debt at a real price and a real yield. So, you know, the idea that the economy has deleveraged is ridiculous. And if you look at the total market cap of GDP, let's just look at where we were in 2018. We both know that the economy fell apart in the fall of 2018, the Russell 2000 lost almost 30% in a matter of a few weeks. In 2018, the Fed funds rate was 2.5, and that's when Powell threatened to take it to 3 to 3.25. Well, guess where we are now? We're already there. We're already above the rate, well above the rate that Powell was threatening to take the economy to before it fell apart at 2.5%. So when we went to 2.5%, in 2018, Powell had a promise to stop raising interest rates. He didn't do that yet, right? He continued on with them, and the market kind of healed. It bounced back. Then fast forward to 2019, in the fall of 2019, he continued with quantitative tightening, right? That ended in July of 2019 because the repo market froze over. And that's one of the credit issues that I was talking about. So now we have neither one. We have an acceleration of QT from 47.5 billion a month to 95 billion a month. We have an acceleration, just happened in September. We have an acceleration in the rate of rate hikes. We're no longer talking about 25, we're talking about 75 rate. We'll get another 75 basis point rate hike early November. I think it's November 2nd. So you know, the idea that we should start bottom fishing or hoping that, you know, there's a pivot. The way you define the traditional pivot is going back to zero and Q and going back into QE. The pivot now is defined, Wall Street hopes, is we're not going to raise rates by 75 basis points. We're going to raise rates by 50 basis points. If that's the pivot you're waiting for to save the overinflated stock market that is still trading at 150% equity prices to GDP, not going to happen.
Okay. So, but look what's happening with the dollar. Look what's happening with China, with the global currencies. They're in complete turmoil. How much longer can they hold out with a strong dollar and higher rates in the U.S.?
Well, we're stepping into earnings season right now, Kerry. This is the preamble to earnings season. I can't wait to hear the banks come out with their massive loan loss reserve increases and say, listen, you know, it's not just the dollar that's hurting us. It's demand destruction. And that category, you know, one hurricane that's just offshore is intensifying rapidly. Wait until the Cat 5 hits, because we, you know, rate hikes work with a lag. So in March of this year, March of 22, we were at zero still, Kerry. Mm-hmm. We're going to 4.5 by March of 23. You haven't even begun to see. I mean, the damage done is going to occur with a lag. So, you know, when the Fed raises interest rates, they don't just magically say, oh, the Fed funds rate is now 3.25%. They don't do that. What they have to do is sell a bunch of assets to the primary dealers to drain liquidity out of the financial system. That's how they get the rate up. So they're doing those overnight repos, and then they're burning the balance sheet, and they're raising rates, which, by the way, when you raise interest rates, you don't just raise interest rates and say, oh, rates are going up. Who cares? It's actually the borrowing cost. It's the cost of prime lending. It's all bank loans have gone up exponentially in price, in the yield. It's the credit card debt. It's auto loan debt. It's variable rate interest payments. All those things are affecting and hurting the consumer, who is still suffering from falling real wages. So we haven't seen any real pressure yet on earnings. And you're going to start to see warnings of, like we saw in the chip sector, hey, we got a strong dollar here. So our multinational business is getting killed. And we're getting demand destruction from a consumer who's being buffeted by the Cat 5 winds that are just starting to accelerate.
Okay, so we don't have any good news ahead here, and yet gold, you know, has gotten slammed. It's getting slammed again today. If you're not aware, it's October 7th, 2022. Silver looks like it put in a bottom, and it's perhaps going to go higher. If we're getting this deflation, though, the real price of gold might go up, but the nominal price could go down, right?
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base, with Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, I guess I get a lot of things wrong. I am, just to complete disclosure, I've been in the treasury bond complex. I got that wrong. But what I did not get wrong is the dollar, long the dollar and out of gold. So I've been out of gold for quite some time now, other than a small 5% physical position. So why did I sell? Why did I take down my position so extensively? And I said this month, you know, quarters ago, I said, listen, if you're going to have rising nominal interest rates, you're going to have rising real interest rates as well. Because I also predicted that you're going to have some form of disinflation. So even though I don't think inflation is going to go from, you know, 9% to a negative number, it's going to be falling. The rate of change is going to be falling from, say, 9% to 7%, 6%, 5%. You might get down to somewhere around 4 or 5% in the first half of 2023. So that's disinflation, and you have rising nominal rates. So in other words, the real interest rate is rising. And when real interest rates are rising, you don't want to go near gold. And by the way, that the real interest rate is concomitant with a rising US dollar. Now, that's all going to change next year. I mean, I love gold. I can't wait to buy it back. But I want to buy it back. Once the recession becomes clearly manifest, you're going to start to see that the duration bond yield will start to fall. And I don't know if when the recession is going to become clearly manifest. They're waiting for it.
Might be here now, for all we know, right?
Yeah, yes, correct. But that data doesn't get reported until October, November. So when you're going to start to see towards the end of this year, especially into 2023, some horrific, horrendous, putrid economic data points, which is going to force a bid into the sovereign U.S. bond market, which is going to cause Treasury high yield spreads to blow out. It's going to bring down the nominal yield. At the same time, I expect disinflation, but not outright crashing inflation. So real yields will start to fall at that time in anticipation of them crashing, because when the credit market freezes, the Fed's going to start to lower interest rates more significantly. And then the idea is going to come back. They're going to have to reliquify the credit markets. It's inflationary. So if you have nominal rates capped and inflation rising, what happens to real interest rates? They fall, right? And that's rocket fuel for gold, especially if you get that comes with a falling U.S. dollar, which I think will happen sometime next year, and even falling commodity prices, falling energy prices. Then it would be great for the miners too. So we do have a scenario developing that's good for gold. It's just not, that's what I do. So the most people in this business are, I call them used carpet salesmen. They come on and say, you can't time the market. Well, I believe them when they say that. You can't time the market. But somehow I'm supposed to believe you can pick which stocks are good, but you can't time the business cycle. You can't time the liquidity cycle. But somehow you know what stocks to buy. You have no value. If you're going to tell, if the mainstream financial media has people come on telling you, hey, just buy the S&P 500, just be levered long stocks all the time, and maybe go from small caps to large caps to international stocks, mix up the mixture a little bit. There's no value added. There's no value added. That's what we do here at Pentaport. We measure and map the liquidity cycle, the rate of change or the rate of change of inflation and growth.
All right. So you talked about energy. You think energy prices are actually going to go down?
No, not in the short term. I don't. We still have the problems over in Russia. We have the problems over in Europe. I do believe, though, that demand destruction is going to become so acute in the early part of 23 that you could see a drop in energy prices. And that would give you some relief in inflation, and it'd give you some relief in gold. But
temporary.
It's temporary, and it's just not happening now.
So all this talk about the death of the dollar, going to an alternative, it's really the only game in town, isn't it?
Well, if you just owned the U.S. dollar this year and say shorted Bitcoin, which is supposed to be the alternative to the U.S.
arbitrage.
Yeah, that would have been a great arbitrage. Wouldn't that be, short Bitcoin, long the U.S. dollar? I mean, it wouldn't be a very responsible portfolio for a fiduciary to have, but it sure as heck would have worked fantastically, Terry.
Yeah. Called that peak, by the way, on my show and another show that I do with a trader out there by the name of Nick Santiago. We called the peak in Bitcoin 67.7. It just happened to coincide with the Miami, the North American Bitcoin show in Florida, getting all that hype. You could just go by the news cycle and you knew when it was time to get out of Bitcoin. I'll admit
I heard one of these advertisements for Bitcoin. Even Janet Yellen says it's something that's really great, a great technology. I said, well, if you're going to take your investment advice from Janet Yellen,
you deserve it.
Yeah. She's the same one who said that, the QT is like watching paint dry. I mean, these federal officials, subprime mortgage is contained. They can go on and on about, inflation is transitory. I mean, they have the hit parade of how horrible, how absolutely horrific their predictions are. It's off the charts.
Hey, and all of that has turned out to be incorrect. She was trying to channel her inner Alan Greenspan, but she's not a good medium.
Yeah, her crystal ball might have a couple of leaks in it.
Yeah, like whatever happened to irrational exuberance? That seems to have left our vocabulary altogether.
Well, who was to blame for irrational exuberance? It drops right on their doorstep. When you blow up the Fed's balance sheet, went from $800 billion in 2007 to $9 trillion of high-powered money by January of 2022. $9 trillion. And we went, gee, what are we gonna, you know, I think what's happening here, Carrie, and I knew this in July. I said, the Federal Reserve is so darn embarrassed. They just gotta be so embarrassed about what they're doing, about their predictions, about, you know, buying mortgage. Why in the world are you buying mortgage-backed securities all the way in June of this year? Just the buying mortgage-backed securities. I mean, the housing market, the housing prices went up 20% 2 years in a row, and you're still buying mortgage-backed securities. I mean, shame on them. And now they finally get it. They go, hey, we supposedly care about the middle class and the lower class. That's who they espouse to care about the most. Mm-hmm. And they are getting wiped out by the inflation that they created. It wasn't you, it wasn't me. It didn't happen by, you know, COVID didn't create it. It's because you paid people to stay home and not work. You paid them $6 trillion and said, don't pay your mortgage, don't pay your car payment, you know, don't pay your student loan. Here's some checks. Go out and buy a bunch of stuff, but make sure you don't stay out too long and wear a mask. And don't make anything either. And so it's a huge supply, demand, and balance. They know that now, and they just feel embarrassed because of all their crappy, you know, paint dry. I just read litany to you. So now what they have to do is they're all out. The FOMC, every single member, even the Uber doves that used to be, you know, the cash carries of the world. Hey, we're going, you know, screw you, Wall Street. We're going to 4.5%. The inflation we created was primarily in asset prices. We're taking all of that inflation back until we get CPI down to very close to 2%. And I don't care what happens until the credit market freezes.
I don't know how they're going
to. So if you want to, if you don't want to react to that, if you don't, you know, if you can't time the market, you know, like, you know, here's what's going to happen, Kerry. Here's what I believe is going to happen from a guy who gets some things right. We're going to have a very steep recession in 2023. You're going to have a big bid into the bond market. Asset prices are going to crash. Credit markets are going to freeze. And then at that time, I'm going to sell my bonds. I'm going to go long some really good bargains with really good dividends. Yeah. In an economy that is going to be slightly inflationary at first. I don't know how inflationary it's going to get because I don't know exactly the reaction function of the Fed. I know they have to react to a credit market freeze. They're going to reliquify the market. They're going to crush the U.S. dollar, and they're going to bring some money onto Wall Street. That's my plan. So, you know, call me a market timer if you want to, but I'll wear that badge with pride.
Yeah, well, I find it interesting. They have to. They've only got one playbook here, right? It's like the spigot. It's just controlling the money spigot, and indirectly through interest rates, they're doing it effectively, and directly through QT.
Carrie, let me ask you a question. I never get to ask you a question. What do you think, after all of this tumult, that if the middle class or consumers are paying attention, that some of them will at least put a you and a cry out to abolish the Federal Reserve? Can we just get to agree that they are incompetent and feckless and are destroying the American consumer they put a trenching gap between the people like me who own multiple houses and work on Wall Street and the people who are living pay the renters who have no houses, who have no portfolio. And they're just living paycheck to paycheck, and the paycheck goes down and down through inflation, every single one. Why don't we launch a campaign to keep the money supply commensurate with mine supply of gold, and then let the cost of that money available to be borrowed, that high-powered money, that's the base money supply, would grow at 2% per annum, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Never more. Yeah. And have the cost of that money be a function of the supply of savings versus the demand for money. But
the problem, Michael, is that the Joe Sixpack and Steve Chardonnay don't even know what the Federal Reserve is, let alone that it's screwing them over and destroying their lives, your life, and your country. They don't have a clue about it.
Okay. So they think
the president runs all this stuff.
So what you just said is almost verbatim. So what I said, I was on a previous interview last week, and I answered this question myself, and I was hoping you can give me a better answer. I said, you know what? I was asked the question. I said, you know what I believe? I believe that the average, would you say Joe Sixpack and Steve Chardonnay?
Steve Chardonnay.
They know more. They know more. They know more about the Kardashians than they do about. So if I tell somebody, listen, let's make the base money supply grow commensurately with the mine supply of gold. How many people are going to go, what did he just say?
Yeah. You mean they mine gold? I thought they printed it. Look, it's and where's Andrew Jackson? Where's our Andrew Jackson who will put the kibosh on it? You know, will survive assassination attempts and defamation, slander of him and his family. I don't see him. Trump will love the Federal Reserve. I don't know about DeSantis, but certainly nobody on the other side of the aisle wants to tinker with their cash cow.
Well, Trump looks like a superstar compared to who we have now. But you're right, though. Trump, what did Trump say? I love debt and I love a cheap dollar. That's sort of, you know, that was his mantra. And he was trying to compel Jerome Powell to slash interest rates to negative to match those of what
would have been a disaster.
Yeah. It is a disaster, but it would have been worse of a disaster if we had to raise from zero instead of raising from zero to raise from some negative number.
So I don't want to talk politics here, but let's talk storm recovery. Pine Island, which is not too far from you, it's in Lee County, and the bridge was severed, and basically our governor just said, hey, get that thing fixed. In 3 days, the bridge is back, all right? Now, this is the kind of thing that myths are made of, but could you imagine if it happened in New York or in L.A. or Chicago or any of these other cities? It would have never happened here. They'd still be bitching. They'd be riding boats across.
Well, there might be some fish that would have been impaled by, you know, putting the pylons back in. So we'd have to go through some EPA study.
Right.
A year or two. I think it took like a decade to fix Rockefeller Center's ice skating rink. So, you know. So DeSantis, I would love, you raise a great point, though, Kerry. I would love to know how Ron DeSantis, first of all, I don't want him to leave Florida. I'm in Naples.
Right.
I'm in Collier County, is the county south of Lee. And the shoreline of Collier got hit bad. But I'd love to know what Ron DeSantis thinks about money supply and the Federal Reserve. I have a visceral feeling he hates them. And I hope he does. I hope he abhors the Federal Reserve system as much as I do.
It's central planning. You know, when you get down to it, the Federal Reserve is our central planning ministry, you know, Department of Central Planning. And except they can't even look out as far as like China. So just
data dependent Fed. Right. And it's not just Kerry. I just wanted to add this. You know, this is why I asked you the question about central banks. Where in the world, where is the central banker of the world that we should look to as a beacon? I mean, Japan, Kuroda has the rates pinned at 25 basis points, 0.25% in an insolvent government. I mean, it's just like mind boggling. Where do you look? Where is the sanity in the world any longer? It doesn't exist.
Well, we're not going to solve it today, Michael. Maybe the world will wake up. But the dumbed down populace, it's not just here in the U.S., it's in Canada, it's all over the world. You know, they don't teach Austrian economics in college. When I went to college, I went to Pace University Business School, and I stumbled upon a cache of Austrian economics literature and books. It was in like a dimly lit corridor, musty corridor that nobody ever went to. And I was looking for it. And, that's in the old library in the basement. And, you know, I found it. But now it is easier. There actually is a large following of Mises and the Austrians. And perhaps there's some hope there. Well, hey, go.
I want to add one more thing for you, close. And this might seem like a non sequitur, but if you put term limits, you know, you put George Washington back in power in D.C., and get some of these, the deep state of DC out of there, guess what? They won't have any interest So how do we get in the situation? You have politicians say, how do I stay in power? I give people stuff.
Yeah.
How do you give people stuff? You sell treasury bonds to the Federal Reserve. They buy them and you give people stuff. And that's how you ended up in this problem. Giving people stuff for free makes you look good. Bread and circuses. It goes back to the Roman Empire and maybe even before that. Get those people out of there with term limits. Get them out. And maybe we can live with some sanity, fiscal and monetary sanity in D.C. Get them out.
Well, that's a great point. We'll end it on that. Go to pentoport.com. Check out Michael's site. Get in touch with him because he totally nailed this. Michael, if we had shifted our portfolio over to you, let's say the middle of last year, a little earlier, where would you be right now?
Well, we made money in 2021. We're down about 2% this year.
So you're a big winner.
In relative terms.
There was a guy, just conclude with this, Howard Katz. He wrote a newsletter called The One-Armed Economist, which was a takeoff of what FDR said. And he said, when there's a depression, a recession, you win by not losing.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that 2% before fees is going to be, I hope and pray, it's a positive number. All we need is the bond market to catch its bid. There's never been a moment in history ever that you have a global downturn where people don't run into dollar and in sovereign debt. And I think the U.S. Treasuries. And I think that's going to be the case once this recessionary data becomes manifest. Don't forget, and we'll add on this, ISM services still growing pretty robustly. 263,000 jobs created. They were above expectations. Unemployment rate falling to a 50-year low, back to the 50-year low. We're not seeing the bad data yet, but that hurricane is intensifying and it's right offshore. And it's coming right to your neighbor.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. If you got a question for Michael, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. And don't forget, go to the site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Get your free newsletter. Michael, appreciate it. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.